Well, good evening. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because, well, we have with us for the first half of this hour, Bob Griswold. And Bob is with the Ready Made Resources and certainly helps Radio Liberty stay on the air and, of course, reach out across the nation, really on 60 stations every week. So we're reaching people, trying to get them educated as to what's going on. And, of course, Bob talks about preparedness. Why should we be prepared? Why? Because we're facing all sorts of problems, financial problems, we're facing military problems, we're facing the threat of new types of epidemics, we're facing the threat of unrest here in this country. After all, we saw what happened in France recently when they had their riots of their Muslims. Of course, the whole thing was contrived. The government waited 12 days before putting on a curfew and really trying to stop the unrest there. But that's how you get the unrest going, so that you can justify increasing control over the lives of all of the French people. And believe me, you do not spontaneously get riots going on in 200 different cities across France without a great deal of coordination, and you can be certain that French intelligence had thoroughly infiltrated this whole Muslim fascist faction over there. So as with here in the United States in the years of the Communist Party was thoroughly infiltrated by the FBI and directed certainly by people working for the FBI. So I'm sure the same thing is happening with the Islamic movement throughout the world. But it really doesn't matter whether it's real or contrived. It's going to be used, of course, to take away the freedom of the people. So we're facing all sorts of real problems here in the United States. And our plea to you is get yourself prepared for difficult times. Bob Griswold, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
You're quite welcome, Doctor. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Well, now, of course, you're on the front lines of the battle. Are people beginning to turn to you to begin to lay in supplies for difficult times? Or are they sort of continuing their Pollyanna ways that everything's going to be just fine?
Well, you always know the majority of Americans, just from watching what happens during hurricanes, are totally unprepared. You know, it, Doctor, it never ceases to amaze me that a couple days after a hurricane, you see people line up going, where's the government with the water? They're waiting for bottles of water. They're waiting for MREs. Which, by the way, a lot of those MREs, put it this way, are ending up on the Internet. People who took them didn't even eat them. They're just selling them. It ends up as a government boondoggle where millions of dollars of taxpayers' money are just now ended up on the Internet selling.
No, I can buy my MREs up on the Internet now?
Illegally, yes. They're illegal to buy them that way, but people are selling them. And if you want to buy them that way, but you know, each of the military MREs have written on them, commercial resale is prohibited property of U.S. government. But it doesn't stop unscrupulous people from doing what they want to do. It never ceases to amaze me that just a few days after you have something like that, people don't have water, they don't have food, and they know it's coming. So to answer the question, you know, yeah, the majority of American people just hope nothing is going to happen and then trust that the government will be there when it does.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, that's I can assure you that when there's a real problem, the government's not going to be there.
No.
FEMA is all about management and control. It's not about helping you. Well, Bob, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story there?
Well, Doctor, you know, just even now, I was watching Fox tonight, Fox News, and they were saying that FEMA is out of money to pay people for their flood insurance. and not to submit any more applications. They were telling FEMA not to submit any more applications to the government because the government doesn't have more money to pay for the people that have flood insurance. They cannot take care of you, and that's what we have to get out of the mindset of, that, you know, when there's local disasters once or twice, the government steps in and does it. But, you know, with the amount of things that could hit the United States, and I believe that will hit the United States, it's been told by our leaders that it's going to happen, and I think they know, because, you know, I think we both know why. We know, I think a lot of them are contrived, that, you know, unless people get ready to do it, the government will not be able to take care of them. And I think it's fairly obvious from what we've seen over the last, you know, 6 months.
Well, I think it's really so interesting. One of the hardest things for the average individual to realize is government doesn't have any money. The only money that the government has is what it takes from us by taxation, or what it borrows from future generations, or what it can produce by simply printing more money. And that, of course, inflates the money supply and devalues the value of the money that we already have. So government really doesn't have any money. And when you get just too many things going on, why, there's really very little the government can do about it. And certainly, you're absolutely right. One or two things they can take care of, but mass catastrophe, why, they would be at a total loss to be able to manage things all across the country, because there just isn't any money. They could have a dictatorship, but as far as providing for the needs of the people, there's just no way it can be done.
Doctor, have you noticed that they announced it today that they would, or a few days ago, they were going to stop releasing the M3 money supply?
Yes, I think this is very, very significant in the fact that what they're really saying is, we're going to start increasing the money supply, which will mean we're devaluing your currency, but we're not going to print that officially because we don't want the American people to know what,
that's exactly what
we're doing.
What it means. And that's such a dangerous precedent. What they're admitting basically is that we're bankrupt.
Well, I think it was so interesting today, Bob. I don't know if you noticed, but gold leapt up to over 480 something an ounce, and silver was up to, what, 485? Mm-hmm. Silver was up to over $8 an ounce.
805.
Is this foretelling something? Platinum was up strongly. I don't know if this foretells, you know, that they're beginning to lose control, whether it's a temporary squeeze or whether the whole monetary system is beginning to shake at its very base. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, because I will tell you that people throughout the world are increasingly beginning to lose confidence in our financial system. And if our financial system were to begin to collapse, why, it would simply destroy the savings of every American, the pensions of every American. We'll be back in just a moment with Bob Griswold. Well, Bob, I was talking to people today who put out the big Berkeys, and they were telling me that a lot of people are buying the big Berkeys and the Berkey lights anyway, that they've had a tremendous demand for them since Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Wilma and Hurricane Rita. So apparently, at least some people are beginning to realize how important it is to have a vehicle of being able to produce your own clean and drinkable drinking water.
But, Doctor, to put that in perspective, you know, if New Millennium is selling, you know, 500 big Berkeys a month or 1,000 big Berkeys a month, which would really stress them to be able to provide that many, that is just fractions, small fractions of the American people that will need them. I mean, because this is what people don't understand. Because it is not a large market, people do not come and buy this stuff every day. They think about it when emergencies happen, and then they might buy a little bit and it goes away. The ability to produce long-term storage food, big Berkeys, and these type of survival products, emergency products, you know, the capacity to produce them is very small. So when you have an emergency, it overwhelms the people at New Millennium. They have been overwhelmed. But even though they're selling more than they normally sell, it's not a large amount in the relationship to the amount of people that are in this country. And so what we have is we have a population that has grown up totally dependent on the government. And, you know, whether this thing with bird flu is true or untrue, you know, you name the disaster. One time, one of these disasters is going to happen. And it's not going to be a local New Orleans disaster. It's going to be a global disaster, or at least a national disaster. And I think one of the strong possibilities could be the economy. I think it's very significant that they stopped announcing the M3 money supply. And if this happens, you know, I've gone through this many times, Doctor. I've been in business now for 12 years. The phones are jammed. I mean, my phone rings 24 hours a day. People absolutely needing product. They have to have it now. And they don't understand. It's not available.
Well, I remember about a year or so ago when we had a major hurricane down there in Florida, or I should say another major hurricane in Florida, and everybody wanted generators, and there just weren't any generators.
No, there weren't. We sold every one we had in stock very quickly, and people, it was such a mindset that we live in an economy that's, you know, on demand. You can get it, you can go down to Walmart and pick it up whenever you want it, but the things that they wanted were not available, and a lot of people could not understand that. What do you mean it's not available? It's not available. There's a 30-day waiting period right now. Well, in the event of a severe major, you know, catastrophe, a 30-day waiting period might as well be a 300-year waiting period, because what it means is you're not going to get it.
Well, I think it was really so interesting. We have never in my lifetime seen as many major storms in the way of hurricanes, you know, off the East Coast as we have here in the last 3 or 4 months. And then suddenly there are tornadoes. Now, we've always had tornadoes, but they had something like 18 tornadoes the other day.
Yeah, when someone came to Tennessee.
And really, this time of year, having that many tornadoes, it's almost as if something strange is happening to the weather. So, and of course, my contention is, I've read what Brzezinski said back in 1970, Zygmunt Brzezinski, talking about how they were going to be able to control the weather, they were going to be able to create storms, they were going to be able to create droughts, yes, and even create new types of diseases that would incapacitate the population. However, very few people would have to know about it. Writing, I believe it's page 57 of Between Two Ages. If you'd like a copy of that page, we'll be glad to send it to you. There's simply a footnote at the bottom talking about what's going to happen in the future. But we are living in the future. I'm firmly convinced they know how to control the storms, how to create storms, how to dissipate storms. And they have the HAARP system, and they have all sorts of vehicles of controlling the weather. But, of course, they don't want the American people to know that.
You know, again, Doctor, we've privately talked about the bird flu, and I really don't know. I'm not an epidemiologist to know what the scoop on it is. I know that we do have SARS, West Niles. I know we have, you know, you really can sit down and start naming diseases that, you know, we have never heard of before. And all of a sudden, they just start coming out. Over the last 5 years, it seems like there's a new absolutely deadly disease coming out every year now.
Well, because we know that our government was working with West Nile as a biological warfare agent. SARS is an entirely new disease. In fact, the first case happened to be a Chinese physician, a Chinese biologist who was working on biological warfare agents over there in China. But believe me, the Chinese government works very closely with our government, developing all of these terrible types of disease for mass murder.
So when you add that up, I mean, people really need to think about this thing with the money supply, because what you said is so true. We never think about it. The government has no money. The only money they have is what they take from us via taxes, and those taxes, you know, come in a sort of different ways. But we have spent, George Bush has spent more deficit money than I guess the last four presidents put together have spent. And it just, it's doesn't seem like there's any end to it. And again, tonight I heard that there's no more money in the for flood relief as far as you know, flood damage to homes. It's all been spent. They said people will eventually get it, but who knows? People don't have a home, and you'll eventually get your money. That's not what you want to hear. The government's admitting that that agency is out of money. They're broke. They didn't plan for a disaster this big, and that's just one city disaster.
Well, of course, they also have the massive expenditures as far as the Mississippi coast, because the whole Mississippi coast was simply wiped out. And I mean, they were giving a certain amount of money to the people in New Orleans, and that's what we think about. But if you've seen the pictures or talked to the people from Mississippi, the whole coast is gone. I mean, the whole cities are gone there. And, of course, some of these people had government flood insurance, and the trouble is, the government doesn't have the money to pay it off. So, well, what do? They'll just start to print the money. That's the way you do it. But every dollar they print devalues the value of the currency the rest of us have. Well, anyway, Bob, why don't we tell our listeners just a little bit about what they might be able to get from Ready Reserve Food. You actually have a catalog there, don't you?
Yes, sir. We have a catalog that people can call. However, most of our catalog is now online.
Okay, and that'll make it a lot easier.
Yeah, they can go online, they can start looking. We have the food storage on there, we have solar energy. We have a lot of books, and I always recommend knowledge, knowing how to do things. If you can have all the supplies in the world, and if you don't know how to take care of yourself in a disaster, then they really will not do you much good. So all that information's there. We have a lot of free information. And you know, people need to think about what do I need to do as far as food? Because I think food will be the big coercion agent that is used to make people do what the government wants them to do.
Well, you know, it's so interesting, Bob. There's been a couple of articles up on the Internet recently by farmers saying that with the increased cost of the diesel fuel, with the increased cost of chemicals and fertilizer, both which are related to petrochemicals, the price of petrochemicals and oil, that they're not going to be able to get money from the bank to plant their crops this year, because the banks are saying you're not going to be able to pay it back with the current price of the crops, either grain or wheat or what it would be. So we're not going to lend you the money. And a lot of the farmers are saying, look, why should I plant a crop and take a gamble and work my heart out from early morning till late at night when I'm not going to make any profit at the end of that time? It's far better not to work for nothing than to work very, very hard and still get nothing. So I think a lot of our farmers are not going to be planting crops this coming year. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, Doctor, I think what you hit the nail on the head is the fact that it becomes economically unviable for these farmers to actually grow their crops, and so the land goes fallow. It just that they don't do anything with it. And I think all you have to do is look at the last 50 years in this country and realize that the American farmer has gone out of business. There is no such thing as the American farm anymore. It's the big agri-farms. They're owned by massive companies. A couple companies control all the ability to produce the food in this country. And so they're not in it because it's a family business. This isn't something that they've lived off the land for the last 100 years their family has. This is a business for them. And if there's no money in it for them, they will not produce their food because, I mean, who wants to go in business to lose money? Nobody does.
Well, I think it's what's so interesting is that whether this is true or not, but I've seen several notations from farmers saying that they've been contacted by the banks that saying, we're not going to lend you the money this coming year or maybe next year because we know you're not going to be able to make a profit. And if you can't make a profit, you're not going to pay us back. And the farmer is saying, well, that's not so bad because we're not going to make a profit. Why should we bother to plant? So we would only have to have this happen to a certain number of farmers that we would begin to see a progressive disruption of the supplies of food. Now, right now, apparently, we do have some fairly good supplies, at least if what we're seeing and reading the papers is true. We do have fairly good supplies, but how long will those last here in the United States?
The supplies that we have, Doctor, really, it's kind of deceptive. Really, what the government has in stock for emergency use is very limited. In fact, it's about 15 pounds of food per person, and with 11 of that being wheat. So you think about the government has about 15 pounds of food stored that they have in the supply line that they could use to feed the American people, 15 pounds per person with 11 of that being wheat. The rest of the food, it's on demand. It will be consumed in a few days. So they have to keep on producing it because even though it seems like large volumes of food, it goes quickly when 300 million people are eating it. It's what we've done to the national farmer because, again, we've really destroyed the local farm to the expense of, you know, these big, massive,
Massive conglomerates. Well, let's get your telephone number and your website out there, Bob.
Okay, the website is Ready-Made Resources, ReadyMadeResources. ReadyMadeResources.com. And again, that's where people can get most of the information. My phone number, if they want to call, is 800-627-3809. Now, I will caution and ask people not to call till after the show because I'm the only one here and I won't be able to answer the phone. So after the program, I'll be here for about an hour and people can call me if they like.
Give that telephone number out just one more time.
800-627-3809. 09.
All right, fine. Well, hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment with Bob Griswold from Ready-Made Resources. And, of course, one of the things we're encouraging our listeners to do is make preparations. I believe we're entering into very, very difficult times. Why do I say that? Well, I not only read the signs of the times, but I read what the other people talk about, the release of the Shambhala Force. And, of course, if you get our new three pamphlet set on the occult hierarchy, you'll learn about what Shambhala is and its implications for our life. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is, of course, for the first half hour, will be Bob Griswold. We're simply talking about people beginning to make preparations for the things that lie ahead. And Bob, you actually have some good lists there, don't you, of the things that people really need to have on hand?
Well, again, first and foremost, people need to think about water. Now, I think either you or New Millennium carry that the Big Berkey water filter, which is an absolutely great water filter. If people in Louisiana had the Big Berkey, they could have filtered their water and drank it and not had to stand in the government water lines crying and complaining about where's the government, which I don't feel sorry for people like that, to tell you the truth, because, I mean, common sense tells people you need water. If you see a storm coming, you'd better store some water. But be that as it may, you know, the Big Berkey. I also recommend food. Now, I'm going to step out on a limb here, Doctor, because my wife and I, we've stored a little over a year's worth of food for each person in our family. Sometimes I don't think 2 weeks is going to be enough. If there's any truth to the bird flu, there could be three or four different waves of it, quarantining. The Mormons, which, you know, I'm not a Mormon, so I don't want anybody to think I'm promoting the Mormon religion. I'm not a Mormon. I know a lot of good Mormons, good people, but they recommend people have a year's worth of food in their house. Even 3 months per person. It's not that long. It goes quick. And what happens is it keeps people out of panic, because if you have nothing in your home, when disaster hits, you will panic. It's human nature. And that's what we saw in the last couple of disasters that have hit. People panicked because they had zero ability to provide for themselves once the disaster hit. And that's not what you need to be. So people should prayerfully consider what I need to do. I don't want it to sound like an infomercial, because I think there's reasons people need to look into these things and make the evaluation for themselves. But if you have that kind of bent and you're so led, I mean, the more food you have in your house, the better. The more you'll be able to dispense Christian charity if the time comes. And I do believe in that. I don't believe that we just hoard everything to ourselves. I believe we live in a community. And if we do have extra stored, if we do have extra water, or the ability to produce water, or the ability to have food, I think, you know, we have a great opportunity to show our neighbors some kindness and being able to give to them if they don't have. So those are things that people need to be thinking about. Now, on the website, I want to explain the difference. There's two different basic kinds of food people can buy. One is a dehydrated food. Dehydrated food is nothing more than, say, broccoli with a dehydrated, put in a can, beans, dehydrated, put in a can, or different mixes like, you know, pancake mixes or bread mixes, and they're put in the can. They have to be cooked like normal food. When you save a broccoli, you'd have to add water back and then boil it. And then there's freeze-dried food, Mountain House, Alpine Air. Those foods are already pre-made, meaning you can buy, say, chicken and rice. It's already pre-made. All you have to do is add hot water, and then you have a very tasty, and they are very good meals, very tasty meal.
Let me ask you, do they have MSG in them, though?
No, they do not put MSG in the meals.
Oh, good.
No, they do not. And so they're really... I guess so many people have asked them. I don't know if they used to, but I know they don't put it in there anymore. So you can get these foods and so if a disaster hits, you'll have some for yourself, your family, possibly giving you some away. And you want to talk about MSG and salts and preservatives. Now, what the government will give you, the MREs, which if you're hungry, you will eat them, and you won't care too much about the MSG if you get hungry enough. But they are loaded with it. And so you have an option. You can,
hold that stuff right there. And, of course, I suppose when you're hungry, eat the MREs, but stay away from that MSG as much as you can. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob was just talking about freeze-dried and then, of course, the dried food, and commenting that the MREs, which are the government ration, actually has a lot of MSG in it. Although on the short term, you're probably not going to do much damage, you want to stay away as much as you can from MREs. So if you didn't have anything else to eat, why, that would be one thing. But if you can avoid the MSG products, fine. But certainly MREs are good on a short-term basis. Is that what you're saying, Bob?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to live on them for 6 months. I mean, even though I have eaten them, and they're not too bad tasting anymore. They're fairly tasty. But, again, there's health concerns if you ate them for a long period of time. High in salt, high sodium, MSG.
Well, I think the MSG, which of course is an excitotoxin. Those of you who haven't read Dr. Blaylock's book on excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills, I would certainly want to read it and then take the MREs on a very temporary basis.
Exactly. Again, if you're hungry, you'll eat them. But why be put in that position? So that's the thing I recommend. As much food as you can have in your home, the better. Because, again, I don't only think about myself, I think about others and my ability to dispense Christian charity if that time comes. So those are my thoughts on it.
Well, I think another thing so important is for people to have vitamins on hand and the things that you need to boost up your immune system. And certainly if you were simply on a restricted diet, you wouldn't be getting the vitamin C and D and you wouldn't get the other things that you really need for your health. So no, my wife is laying aside a good supply of the fundamental vitamins that you would need, especially if you were eating a primarily dried or dehydrated foods for any period of time. You need to look after your health, because your health, in the case of an emergency, would be the most important thing you have. So lay in a good supply of these things, and not only that, if there were some sort of an epidemic, why, if you have large doses of vitamin C and vitamin D, in the case of the influenza of selenium, and certainly of the fish oils and of garlic and garlic products, all of these things will help build your immune system where you can begin to resist things. Elderberry syrup, an excellent product in case of influenza.
Yeah, and again, you can pick that up almost anywhere, doctor. But if Walmart sells it, you can drugstore sell it. But once you have an outbreak of influenza and people figure out this does work, and it really does work, you're going to have a run on it, and it will be unavailable. And so this is what I think. People have only a limited amount of discretionary income, and most Americans waste it on really ridiculous things, and on Sunday or Saturday when they have off, instead of reading or educating themselves of how to take care of themselves in an emergency, they have the TV on. Maybe they're probably watching the latest person run up and down a field or bounce a ball, those important things in life.
Yeah, I mean, watching those millionaires running up and down the field with this little ball trying to put it in the hoop.
To me,
multi-millionaires, right?
A football game anymore, because it's so businesslike, is nothing more than a hostile takeover in a field. One company trying to hostile take over the other company. It is a complete waste of time, when there are so many more important things in life today. We can be educating ourselves. We can be learning about things. We can, break the mind-numbing reality of TV. And it does. It just absolutely drains the thoughts out of our brain. It's hypnotic. People who sit there in front of it they lose their ability to comprehend. They lose their ability to read. Turn it off and start reading and learning. And you will be surprised. When you start reading it for yourself instead of just stop hearing it, it all of a sudden it becomes real. And you start thinking, gosh, I need to do something.
Well, here's one thing. We think that if you listen to talk radio, it's much more stimulating than television. Certainly, you've got to be involved, and you've got to be thinking about what you're seeing, what you're hearing, rather than with television. Of course, everything is captured by the visual and by the music, but the ideas, of course, are being funneled into your mind very, very cleverly. Certainly, television is a wonderful means of mass mind control. Bob, let's go ahead and get your telephone number and your website out one more time.
Okay, it's 800-627-3809. Again, that's 800-627-3809. If people want to call, I'll be here. The website, which you can download most of our catalog there, pretty much all of it, is Ready Made Resources. That's standard spelling, ReadyMadeResources, readymaderesources.com.
Well, Bob, thank you so very much, and we'll look forward to talking to you next month. And, just try to keep people aware of what's going on. Of course, we'll talk about some of the other things that you really need to have on hand, besides the food and water and medical supplies and the vitamins and other things. In fact, Bob has a great big long list of the things up on his website that everybody should start thinking about and start laying away and just hope and pray you never...
And, Doctor, I'll be here for the next hour.
Okay, fine. Good night, Bob. God bless.
You.
And that's Bob Griswold from Ready Made Resources, and we'll have open lines the next half hour. Give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464. 8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course we're going to have open lines this half hour. If you'd like to give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And certainly I was really very, very surprised today to see the true leap in the price of gold and the leap in the price of silver. I haven't seen anything like that. I think maybe once or twice, going back to the 1980s, when, of course, we saw both gold and silver go through the roof as the end result of the financial instability that was brought about because of the Vietnam War. And it was the fact that we fought the Vietnam War without financing it. Basically what we did, we didn't raise taxes to pay for the Vietnam War because that would have been unpopular with the people. Instead, they simply borrowed the money, and they printed the money. And, of course, that led to an inflationary spiral that began to peak out in 1971 after we'd been in the war for about 7 years, and that then forced President Nixon to close the gold window and impose wage and price controls because we had a 5% rate of inflation. Now, if you see what's going on today, the government will tell you they have 2 or 3% inflation, but that old adage holds so true. Figures don't lie, but liars figure. And if you look and don't believe what you're told, but believe your lying eyes, of course the prices are going up far more rapidly than that. The price of food has been going up. The price of energy has been going up. The price of health care has been going up. The price of houses has been going up. The price of rents has been going up. All sorts of prices, and the people like Bob Chapin and other guests that we have on a regular basis who are really watching what's going on and watching the producer price index and the consumer price index and not taking the figures, the phony figures that are put out by the government, claim that the real inflation rate is 8 to 9%. Now remember, Richard Nixon was so upset in 1971, that's August 15th of 1971, that he closed the gold window, took the world off of the gold standard, and of course began doing everything he possibly could to bring prices under control. Today, what are we doing? Well, prices are going up. In fact, it's being noticed that the food prices are beginning to go up. And certainly the things we're getting from China are only going very, very little because the Chinese are manipulating their money, the value of their money, because they want to keep exporting their products to the United States. So we really don't have a free market at all. We have a controlled market. And the way the thing is set up is the Chinese win and we lose. And, of course, we're getting all their goods and we're just giving them useless paper money. But one day that money's going to come back to haunt us. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we're going to have open lines this last half hour, and would certainly like to hear from you if you have something you'd like to talk about. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But Alan Greenspan has been saying some very unusual things. If you're reading his speeches recently, why, he's pointing out that things are not working the way that we ordinarily anticipate they would. And ordinarily, of course, when you are in charge of our monetary system and you have a weak economy, why, you lower the interest rates to get the economy going, and you put more money in circulation, and you boom the economy. You might even say lower the tax rate so people would have more money to spend, and that gets the economy going. Now, when, of course, the economy then is going, why, you have to cool the economy or you get runaway inflation. So then you raise the interest rates, you raise taxes, and you cut back on the amount of money that you're pouring into the economy to try to stimulate it. The only trouble is that we haven't been doing that. We've been raising the interest rates to try to cool the economy, but we have not raised the taxes on the average individual yet, although certainly the alternative minimum tax, it was created to do just that. But they didn't want the American people to realize that we were going to be raising their taxes, so they sold the American people on the idea the alternative minimum tax was just for those very wealthy people, you know, those wealthy people who have so much money and pay so little in taxes, and so the alternative minimum tax was to tax them. Well, the truth of the matter was the alternative minimum tax was to tax the middle class as the inflation gradually began to bring them into that bracket so you could increase their taxes, but you wouldn't have to blame the politicians. And then nobody would get mad at the politicians. But, of course, the one thing that they've been doing, that they should not be doing, is pouring massive amounts of money into the economy in the face of inflation. And that's why Bob Griswold was commenting. And I think we should all be aware of the fact that for the first time, and since I can remember, going back over 50 years, the government is no longer going to print the M3. Now, what is the M3? The M3 is certainly an evaluation of the amount of money that is actually in circulation here and throughout the world, the amount of number of dollars. And all of these are simply created by banking or bank, certainly notations or bank entries. And I mean, certainly the basis of money is the money in circulation, the actual money printed. Of course, the real value of money should be the money that's based upon gold and silver. And at one time, our money was based upon gold and silver, and that was the anchor that kept irresponsible politicians and irresponsible people from expanding the money supply, creating inflation, and robbing the average individual. You see, because every time we have inflation, then the value of your money goes down. And so the dollar that existed, you know, in the beginning of the 20th century, and say in 1900, would be worth probably, over $100 today in actual purchasing power. Men used to work for a dollar a day. That was a good salary. And today, men make $150, $175, $200 a day. So many of them, even if you're working certainly in, for General Motors, you're making $25 an hour. So I see what they've done is they've devalued the value of the money. So the money does not buy as much, and as they begin printing more money, it means that the value of the currency actually goes down. But now they're going to begin, obviously, to conceal that. That's the significance of stopping to print M3. Now, the average individual doesn't know that. You have M1, which is the money in circulation, and they keep changing the definition, too, so you really don't know what they're talking about. It used to be that M1 was the money in circulation, the money in banks, and then the M2 was the credit card debt, and had to do with the cash checks that were actually created, and maybe long-term deposits, CDs, things like that. And then M3 really was an overall evaluation of how much artificial money that they had and how much money other countries were holding in U.S. dollars, how many dollars there were out there. But you have to understand they've created trillions and trillions of dollars because we are the reserve currency of the world, and we've been able to export our inflation to other countries. And instead of the other countries spending those dollars, they are actually holding them in the reserves. But Alan Greenspan has said recently that we will not be able to maintain our status as a reserve currency of the world indefinitely. When you are the reserve currency of the world, it gives you tremendous advantage because other countries want to get your currency and hang on to it, and they do not spend it. But when they begin to doubt the value of your currency, then they'll want to get it into something that has tangible value. And at that point, they'll begin buying more and more things in this country. And if you look and see what's happening, some of the things that are happening just don't make sense. Why in the world are the interest rates on long-term treasury bills falling? And so the actually treasury bonds, treasury notes are increasing in value because when the interest rate goes down, why the value of the bond goes up. Now, why is that happening? Well, they don't want to tell you this, but a lot of countries throughout the world and foreign banks are beginning, I believe, to get out of dollars, and they're beginning to buy our treasury bills. They've got to buy something with that. And as more and more people come into the market to buy the treasury bills, why it's a matter of supply and demand, more and more demand, why then, of course, the interest rate begins to fall as people are willing to buy even with a lower interest rate, and that drives up the value of the bonds. And Alan Greenspan claims he doesn't understand why this is happening. I think it should be very obvious that it's happening. Other countries are beginning to lose confidence in the dollar because they're beginning to lose confidence in the president and the current administration. And why shouldn't they lose confidence? Certainly, the American people have lost confidence in our administration. The president's current approval rate's about 37%. And no matter how you feel about the president, these are what his rates are. And if the American people are beginning to lose confidence in the Bush administration, the current administration, and they've got another 2 years and 2.5 years in office, why should other countries have confidence in the system? So I really think that what you're beginning to see, although nobody's telling you yet, is that other countries are beginning to spend their dollars back in this country. They're buying T-bills, and with that, of course, the interest rates on long-term T-bills are not going up as you ordinarily would anticipate, with the fact that they're raising the short-term notes, or the short-term rates, and this is what the Federal Reserve does. But they don't control the long-term rates. And faced with short-term rates that are rising, long-term rates are falling. Doesn't make sense unless you understand the dynamics of what's going on. And there's a conscious effort on the part of the people who are manipulating our monetary system not to let you know what's happening. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. And we really don't have anything prepared, so we would love to hear from you. But one of the things that Alan Greenspan said recently, and I mentioned this the other night, but I think it needs repeating, and that is he gave a talk, and I think it was his November 3rd talk, as he was giving his last talk to the Congress, to the Economic Committee there of the Congress of the United States. And after giving sort of a glowing summary of what a wonderful job he'd done, in the closing part of his talk, he mentioned the fact that we have made massive promises to provide for the elderly citizens of this country. We promised to provide them with Social Security and pensions. We promised to provide them with health. But as he points out, we can't possibly keep all of our promises. There is no way that we're going to be able to provide the pensions and the health care that we promised the senior citizens. And the point he made is, we should let the people know the truth. We should let the people know the truth so they can begin to make preparations. Because people who think they're going to be able to retire at 62 or 65, and then they do retire at 62 and 65, but if the money is not there that they're anticipating, whether it be in their own pensions or perhaps in the corporate pensions, and the health care that they've been promised, there's just no money to pay for it, they've got to start making preparations to look after themselves. And that is what Alan Greenspan said. If you read between the lines of his remarks, I was surprised that he would be this forthright, and yet I think he has an obligation, I think we have an obligation to tell people that the politicians are lying to us. Now, remember, the politicians and the congressmen and the senators, they don't have Social Security like you and I do. They have a special fund for themselves that gives them fabulous amounts of money, and they will get that till they die, or until hell freezes over. In other words, they have nothing to worry about, and they're not going to be on Medicare that does not have anywhere near enough money to provide what it is promised. The congressmen and the politicians have their own special health care provisions that they're going to be looked after. Their families will be looked after at the expense of the taxpayers. But if Social Security was such a good deal, why aren't they on Social Security? Why, very, very simply, because we have a ruling class, and that is really what it's always been, and that ruling class rewards the politicians who have served them. And I wish I could say that we truly had a representative government. At one time we did. But once we began to change from being a republic to a democracy, once we went from to the direct election of the United States senators, because at one time the senators represented the states, and they were there to be a curb on the power of the federal government and on the taxing of the federal government of the states. And, of course, if the senators agreed to increase federal spending, which, of course, then required the federal government to assess the states more money, why those senators wouldn't be reelected by the state legislature, because the state legislatures didn't want the money going to Washington, D.C., and then coming back to control them. They wanted to be able to control the expenditure of money in their own states and dole it out to their benefit, not to the benefit of a massive bureaucracy in Washington, D.C. But once they passed the 17th Amendment, which was one of the most disastrous things that ever happened to America. In fact, it was during the administration of Woodrow Wilson that we got the Federal Reserve Board, which put control of our economy in private hands, the control of a private central bank controlled by a ruling elite. We got the progressive income tax, which was, of course, we were told the progressive income tax was just for the very wealthy, but the truth of the matter, it was for everybody. And then, of course, we got one of the most disastrous things, and that was the 17th Amendment. And the 17th Amendment allowed for direct election of senators, which meant they would be elected by the people rather than by the states. But you see, what it was really all about was now the senators were up for sale. Where do you think, here in California, the $60 million comes from that it takes to get a Senate elected? Well, it certainly doesn't come from ma and pa cattle sitting on their farm here in California. It comes from the financiers with their multi-billions of dollars at their ready disposal. And, of course, we have put all sorts of restrictions on individuals raising or donating, but the corporations and the big committees... The Senate committees and the Republican and the Democratic committees, they have unlimited funds, and the corporations can give unlimited funds. You and I are restricted what they can do, but the corporations, well, they drew up the laws so that they can buy and sell our elected representatives, and that's why today we have some of the finest politicians in Washington, D.C. that money could buy. Well, we've got Mike calling from Coeur d'Alene. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan.
Right. Do you have a question or comment?
I have a question, and it's a very practical one. I was listening early when you had ready-made resources on, and with a young family, a young large family, where is a great place to start on a very limited budget?
I would think it would be probably by laying in a food supply. That would be the first thing you'd want to do, and then have some means of getting water. The two things you need are food and water. That's where you really get started. And also think, as I mentioned earlier, about having a supply of vitamins on hand. Now, these will last a good long time if you keep them in a cool, dry place.
What are you given to any particular brand or the store-bought vitamins?
Well, you can get store-bought vitamins. I tell you what, I believe Bill Sardi, he's got some very, very economical things. You can buy vitamin C in bulk, and I want to tell you that Bill Sardi in the past has helped us, so I want you to know that. But I really believe his products are good, and you can buy bulk vitamin C in big jars. And really, it's a vitamin C powder, is not even in capsules, so you can get the price down very, very low. And certainly you want vitamin C and vitamin D, and you want to get your fish oil, and you want to have maybe a garlic product on hand in case. And selenium is always a good thing to have on hand, because selenium will keep the influenza virus from mutating. And go to his page at survivalvitamins.com. So, I mean, as far as the vitamins, I think they're probably a lot cheaper. You'll get them elsewhere. But go there and check them out. Check that with your store. Make sure you go to a reputable store.
Okay. Well, those were the questions that I had.
Okay. Barbara, my wife, wants you your number, and she'll call you later. My wife is really on top of a lot of these things. I'm going to put you on hold and let our producer pull your, get your number, and she'll give you a call later.
Thank you for your video. Anything else?
But think about, getting bulk foods. I mean, don't get the expensive MREs and things like that. What you really want, are things that, will give you the maximum amount of calories for the least amount of money. And you want, certainly the bulk foods, you want to have some wheat on hand. You want to have corn on hand. You certainly want to think about the things that you would need just to be able to survive. That's the important thing. And actually, the Mormons have done a lot of thinking on this. And if you have any Mormons in your area, you might go to see, and they might even let you go over there to do some canning. That's what we did before Y2K, before too many people did, and the Mormons shut them off. But we went over there. We told them we weren't Mormons. They were very gracious. They let us come in with a team one morning. And we were able to lay in a great supply of the basic staples at a very low cost.
Now, do they supply the staples and the canning?
Right, they have everything there. And you could talk to some of the Mormons in your area and see if they would help you.
What about, you said water, and I noticed on your website that you have the Burke Field, is it?
It's called the Berkey, yeah, the Big Berkey and the Berkey Light. They're good, sound water filters. They've been around for a long time. They're simply gravity. You pour the water in the top, and it comes out the bottom, but it'll be potable water for you.
Okay, and with the larger family of eight people in the family...
With eight people in the family, you may kind of want to get a larger one. There's a Crown Berkey, and there's even a larger one, Imperial, I guess it is. And they really get pretty large. But 2 gallons, certainly, with a regular Berkey, the Big Berkey, and with a Berkey Light. But if you got eight people in the family, you maybe want to get a Crown or Imperial.
Okay. And you were mentioning some vitamins like selenium for, medicinal purposes as far as keeping the influenza virus from spreading or mutating. Where would somebody like myself, who's a layman in that, find information on that?
Well, I would go to Bill Sardi's website. Oh, and probably any good healthcare store would have some selenium for you. Hang on, we'll be back in just a moment here with Mike from Coeur d'Alene. Okay, Mike, as far as, you know, there are products there, and I'll tell you that you want to know something about the products. A lot of these people are real charlatans in the health food business. I think the Now products, Now health food products, are pretty responsible. I think that they're quite good.
Okay. Is that the company name Now?
Called N-O-W, right. But
okay.
I'll let my wife talk to you because she'll give you a call later. And, you know, she's right on top of a lot of these things, and she does a lot of my research and studying for me on this subject.
I got to tell you, I am just new to this, and I've been stored up a little bit. But, you know, definitely single-income family. We homeschool 6 children. Holy moly.
I know, and I'm sure you don't have a lot of extra money, but, you know, think about cutting every corner. Get that food to the Mormons. They've been doing it for a long time, and I'll tell you, it's a lot cheaper than you can get at any other place on your own.
Yeah, well, this, you know, I moved up here into Idaho from California, and I'd never heard of you until I moved up here, and I'm just kicking myself that, geez, what a great resource that people have.
Well, I appreciate that. We do what we do because we're trying to get people to be prepared and trying to cover all of the things that you need to know about that you're sure not going to get from listening to most of the programs.
Well, you know, the thing that I look at is I don't think we could stem the tide of where it's going. Looking at the Bible, reading, my eternal security is sure, but the immediate isn't.
Well, the thing is that we're called to do our best. We're called to, you know, to put on the whole armor of God that we may stand against the wiles of the devil all and haven't done all to stand. Now, can we change things? Absolutely not. But God has intervened in the past. And if you go back and you study the Luciferians were planning on bringing a man named Krishnamurti into power to rule the world in the early 1900s. And God intervened, and their system fell apart. And we cover that certainly in my latest three parts on the occult hierarchy that rules the world. And of course, that's covered in Constance Cumby's wonderful book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. But God has intervened in the past. Will he intervene now? I don't know. But our job is to do the best we can to reach as many people as we can. Remember, of course, Mike, the battle is the Lord's. We're simply to do our best.
Yeah. It's hard not to fret over those things.
I know. Well, believe me, if I didn't reassure myself all the time that I am simply a vehicle, and I really believe that God has helped me. I mean, how many retired orthopedists do you know who are on 60 stations every week? Anyway, God bless you. Thanks so much for calling. I'm going to put you on cold.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And we'll get Mike's telephone number there, and we'll get it to Barbara, and we'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I always enjoy doing open lines. We have a great guest coming up here this next hour, but we'll tell you about that a little bit later. Right now, of course, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and certainly we've gradually grown from one small station up to now. We're about 60 stations, and some of these are 100,000-watt stations, 50,000-watt stations. Some of them are small stations, but we're gradually growing. We took on three new stations in Arizona this week. Now they'll only be getting our Saturday program, but at least they'll hear the truth, and hopefully many of those people then will start listening to us on the Internet. So first of all, you have to know we're on the Internet 5 hours a day, on the American Freedom Network, Genesis Network, and the Radio Liberty Network. And you can get more information by going to our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, where you can hear about all of our programs and the very shortwave frequencies we're on, and the Internet frequencies we're on. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to helping Radio Liberty or joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and you do that by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, which is Peak Oil 2, and it goes into the scam of what's going on today, and how they have actually created artificial oil shortages, artificial shortages of natural gas, driven up the price of electricity. It's all done, and done very intentionally. But, you know, of course, there are many, many of my good friends who disagree with me, and I respect them. We just disagree. However, it really doesn't matter whether I'm right, that this is a scam, or that they're right, that they're really, we're running out of oil. Because we're going to have high prices and higher prices, and certainly a total disruption of our economic system, and the impact of high prices of jet fuel on air travel, and the diesel fuel on the farming industry and the trucking industry. And I really believe we're going to have some serious economic disruption in the United States, whether I'm right, whether they're right. But if you'd like to get the truth, of course, you'll want to read my two newsletters, the Peak Oil Part 1 and Part 2. But we'll be glad to send a Part 2 to you. Part 1 is certainly up on newswithviews.com. That's newswithviews.com, and you can certainly go up there and get my newsletter on Peak Oil 1, and it will be posted on the Internet here very shortly. I apologize for it not having been there already, but it'll be getting up there soon, and Peak Oil 2 will be as well. But we'll be glad to send you a free copy of our newsletter if you haven't been in touch with us before. If you have, of course, we hope many of you want to seriously consider getting our newsletter on a regular basis or joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. So then, of course, we ask you to tell others about our programs. We ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because truly, behind everything going on today, there are powerful spiritual forces who are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. And then we ask you, of course, to pray for our ministers and our leaders. But lastly, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so, we'll be back here shortly, and until then, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls until we ask for them, because we have us on the line this evening, Dr. Art Robinson. And Art has certainly been involved with science for many years. He was a professor at the University of Southern California. Both he and his wife were professors there, and they decided to leave the cloistered academic atmosphere because of all the things that go on in that situation. And he said, when moved up to Oregon, bought a farm. He has, I think, six children, and certainly they homeschooled their children, he and his wife. And then, of course, he continued his scientific studies up there with the Oregon Research Institute. And Mr. Robinson had passed away, so Art had the responsibility for raising his children on his own. But he still stayed very close to what's happening in the academic world. And certainly when this whole issue of global warming came out, it was very obvious to Dr. Robinson and to most other scientists that we were being scammed by the media, by people in very powerful positions who wanted us to believe that global warming was reality. And so, well, I'm going to let Dr. Robinson tell the story of what he did to try to demonstrate the fact that reliable scientists, the scientists we should be relying upon for our information, not the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Wall Street Journal, although the Wall Street Journal is better than the others, but as far as the reality, Dr. Robinson, are we really having global warming, or are we being put on?
Well, there are two things. One, the planet is warming up. The Earth's temperature fluctuates in concert with solar activity, and it went through a very warm period 1,000 years ago when it was much warmer than it is today. And 300 years ago, it went through something that is called the Little Ice Age, when it was much colder than today. It has been warming for the last 300 years, and the current temperature is approximately the same as the 2,000-year average. So we're at a kind of an average temperature, but we have been warming up from a cold period for 300 years. That's natural fluctuations due to solar activity. So we are warming, but humans are not causing it.
But, of course, that's what they're trying to convince the American people, that humans are causing it. It's the CO2 in the atmosphere. And that's why we've got to have a wrenching transformation of our society. I think that was the term that Al Gore used in his book, Earth in the Balance.
Right. And they're lying. There is not a shred of evidence, not a shred of scientific evidence, that humans are contributing to the warming of the Earth.
Well,
we know that glaciers have been receding. But a recent, very good study of 169 glaciers around the world, where they had good quantitative data on glacier length, shows that on average they are receding. The problem is they started receding 275 years ago, and more than half of the recession was over before man put any CO2 into the atmosphere. So humans aren't causing the glaciers to recede. They're receding because of this 300-year warming cycle out of the Little Ice Age.
And, of course, this whole idea that it's the CO2, it is, of course, these gases that are doing that. We'll talk about this when we get back, but what we really need to know is CO2 in the atmosphere having any impact upon the temperature rise? Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Dr. Art Robinson. And, of course, his belief, and I believe totally he's right, because he has the support of literally thousands and thousands, tens of, I should say, thousands and thousands of scientists who have actually answered the questionnaire that he set out about the effect of human activity on global warming. But we hear about the greenhouse gases. Now, and certainly CO2 is one of those greenhouse gases, but is it an important greenhouse gas?
No, water vapor is the primary greenhouse gas. Most of the greenhouse effect is an important effect. It helps keep the temperature of the Earth warm enough for us to live on it comfortably. But the principal greenhouse gas is water vapor. CO2 is a very minor greenhouse gas.
Do you have any idea what percentage of the greenhouse gas CO2 is?
Well, we know the percentage in the atmosphere is about 300 parts per million. But as a greenhouse gas, it probably contributes less than 5% of the warming, natural warming of the Earth.
Okay, fine. Well, now, Chris, you then sent out a questionnaire to how many scientists did you contact, and what was their response?
What we did, the problem was that during the Clinton administration, the administration, Al Gore and all these people that were pushing global warming, kept saying that a consensus of almost all scientists agreed with them that humans were warming the planet. And that therefore there needed not be any discussion of the science. That was all finished. The only thing we had to discuss was how much power we were going to give to them over our energy supplies in order to control this terrible thing. And their program consisted of three parts. One, all the scientists agree with us, so we don't need to discuss the science anymore. Two, we are on white horses of idealism trying to save the planet. And three, everyone who disagrees with this is on the black horse of self-interest wanting to destroy the planet for profit. The second two elements of their program depended on the first, that all the scientists agreed with them. A scientist isn't done that way. You can't decide on a scientific issue by taking a poll or having scientists vote. One man can be right and all the rest can be wrong, and this has happened in the past in science. But you can prove whether or not all the scientists agree with one point by taking a poll. So we took a poll. We didn't have a lot of money. They have millions, hundreds of millions of dollars for this propaganda campaign, and we have very little. But we sent letters to a lot of scientists, and we got more than 17,000 American scientists.
Hold that thought, right? Just one moment, please.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Dr. Art Robinson. And Dr. Robinson was saying that certainly during the Clinton administration, Al Gore and the other people who really believe, that they should be controlling the masses, and the only way you're going to get that is to convince the people that we've got to turn to government to solve our problems. And even if there isn't a problem, why they need to solve it. And so the basic contention was, all the scientists agree with us that global warming is real and that it's being produced by human activity. And it's the greenhouse gases, it's carbon dioxide that's the problem. And based upon the fact that all the scientists agree with us, then, of course, we're going to have to have all these new rules and regulations and controls over the lives of the people. And as Dr. Robinson pointed out, you certainly do not, of course, determine scientific truth by taking a poll of scientists, but you can determine whether or not the majority of the scientists agree on a specific issue. And so he actually, on his own, actually sent out letters to thousands and thousands of scientists across America. And what was the basic question you asked them?
Well, we have a petition. It was a statement that they signed, a petition. And the petition has two parts. One, it states that there is no credible evidence that carbon dioxide is harming the environment, and urges the government not to sign the Kyoto Treaty or to sign on anything else that resembles it controlling our energy supplies. The second part, which might surprise you, is that they signed a statement saying that carbon dioxide was very good for the environment, was a positive influence on the environment, and therefore not only was it not harmful, it was helpful. The second part is based on the fact that carbon dioxide fertilizes plants. All plant mass comes from carbon that the plants obtain from carbon dioxide. So the carbon dioxide increase in the atmosphere, wherever it's coming from, maybe from human activity, is actually causing more plants more animals, more diversity of animal and plant life, and increasing the richness of our biosphere. So the scientists said, first, don't control the energy supplies over this. It's not causing any harm to the atmosphere and the environment. And two, it's actually helpful because we're getting more plants, animals, and biodiversity from it. And this was all encapsulated in a two-paragraph petition, and they signed this petition.
And there were over 17,000 scientists signed this petition?
That's right. More than 17,000 Americans with degrees in science signed this petition. And their names are all listed on the Internet at our website.
Well, why don't you give the website out so people can actually check that?
OISM.org/PPROJECT. PPROJECT. And if you forget the last part, just go to OISM.org and there's a link to it, OISM.org. And there'll be a link to the petition project. And you will see there not only their signatures, but an 8-page review article, which is referenced to over 60 scientific papers in the peer-reviewed literature, which shows the reason the scientists reached this conclusion, the scientific data upon which their conclusions were based.
And, of course, there are a few scientists, I think they may have a couple of thousand government-employed scientists, who want to keep their jobs, who've come out and signed the government's petition stating that human activity is actually creating global warming. But what's wrong with the Kyoto Protocol? Why should we not get involved with that? And what would its impact be upon our society?
The reason this is so serious is because hydrocarbon fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas, which have been demonized three times by these people. First they said we were running out, then they claimed it was global cooling, now global warming. Any excuse. These fuels are essential to people of the world, especially to the 2 to 3 billion people in the third world who are currently lifting themselves from poverty and probably trying to join the advanced civilizations around the world. Now, there are a couple of billion people in the world whose existence depends upon technology. Our existence is made more comfortable by technology. If each person in the United States were to lose half of his personal wealth because they controlled the energy supplies and drove the price of everything up and further ruined our economy, this would be bad for us, but we'd still be all right. If you were in Africa or Asia, you would probably die because the technology decrease due to the dropping of use of hydrocarbon fuels would kick you off the bottom rung of survival. These people barely hang on. So the truth is that if they were able to control the energy supplies of the world and markedly reduce by a large fraction, and that's what they say they want to do, reduce a lot the amount of coal, oil, and natural gas that is used, hundreds of millions of people will ultimately lose their lives.
And, of course, what they'd have to do then would be cut back on electricity production, cut back on the use of gasoline.
And they know this. They know this. At population conferences and population control conferences where they talk about how to reduce the world's population and get rid of hundreds of millions of people that they've decided shouldn't live, global warming is very popular because they see it as a population control measure. Technology depends upon energy, and human life depends upon technology. Without technology, there would be a tenth or perhaps a 20th as many people living on the earth. So technology, the currency of technological progress is energy. The Kyoto protocols would markedly reduce our energy supplies, ration our energy, put our energy under United Nations international control and ration it. And the rationing process and the targets they set for the rationing would sharply decrease world technology.
And I think it's so important that people understand, and the listening audience, there really are people who would like to eliminate 9/10 of the world's population, or even far more than that, because they have a different worldview, and that's what the Kyoto Protocol was really all about.
The interesting thing is the Kyoto Protocol doesn't reduce carbon dioxide in the atmosphere enough to matter, even by their models. It's just the first step, but it sets in place the bureaucracy to ration energy, and it sharply rations energy so that the world's technology would probably drop by 10 or 20% in expense.
And, of course, it would have a devastating effect on the economy of our country, wouldn't it?
Yes. Oh, yes. It would. Every American would become considerably poorer and have poorer technology, and his life would be diminished. As I say, few Americans would lose their lives over this. Although, even an industrialized society, when vast amounts of money and effort are wasted, it does cause human death. But most Americans would live through it. They just wouldn't have as good a life.
But of course, I really feel that there might be a great deal of civil unrest, especially now when we have large numbers of people here at the bottom of the economic rung who come in, illegally. They've got jobs, but what happens if those jobs would vaporize? And they really would, with drastic cutting back on the economy of our nation. So I would think that this could have all sorts of consequences. Yeah, and I think that the people who are pushing the Kyoto Protocol and this massive propaganda campaign that they've launched to confuse the American people, know exactly what would happen if they were successful.
The leaders do know, and they aren't just environmentalists or pseudo-environmentalists, enviros I call them, people who claim to be environmentalists but really are just anti-technologists and fear-mongers. They aren't just these people. It's a kind of unholy alliance between those people and businessmen who produce products that they think will benefit from the reduction in energy supplies, politicians like Al Gore who signed on to try to get votes because they thought that they would look good if they were pushing this. All sorts of people have find it in their self-interest, in personal self-interest, to sign on to this. One of the biggest corporate sponsors of human-caused global warming propaganda was Enron Corporation. Enron Corporation had decided that their product mix would benefit. They were into windmills and other things. They thought their corporation would make more money if Americans were not allowed to burn as much coal, oil, and natural gas. So Enron Corporation subsidized the propaganda on global warming heavily. This just isn't just bureaucrats and enviros and airheads and the media and so forth. It also includes big corporations, some of them, unprincipled corporations that will push lies if they think it will improve their profits.
Well, we see this propaganda campaign pushing conservation. Conservation. Oh, we've got to conserve on electricity. We've got to go around turning off all the lights. Or we've got to go around turning off all the fans. We've got to turn off all the heaters. We've got to conserve. Isn't that part of this whole propaganda?
Well, it's part of the propaganda campaign because they tell a lie. One of the lies they tell is that we don't need this energy if we were all conserving. But the truth is that although it's of course useful to turn off the lights when you're not using them because it saves you money. The fact is that the principal impact would be on industry, the production of things. Many aspects of our lives require lots of energy. Turning off your lights when you don't need them and turning down your air conditioner is not going to make any difference. They're talking about turning off about a third of humanity's energy supplies, and very little of that energy supply is running your lights in your house.
Well, now, aren't we actually losing a lot of our industries because of the, those that are energy dependent, electricity dependent? Certainly a lot of our industries that are dependent upon natural gas are just picking up and leaving this country because neither electricity or natural gas are anywhere near as cheap as they were just a few years ago.
That's right, and that's where political interests, international political interests come in. The global warming thing has been pushed heavily by European countries who are so socialist that they want to see the United States hobbled by lack of energy. They can't compete with the United States otherwise.
And of course,
the Asians, interestingly, are burning more and more hydrocarbon fuels all the time. The Chinese, the people we compete with in Asia, are using more all the time. The Europeans want to use less because they don't do anything anyway except lay around and with socialism. So they like global warming. The Chinese ignore it. The Kyoto Protocols don't apply to India, China. Our real competitors in the world are not even covered by Kyoto.
Hold that thought right
down
there.
Our energy, they won't.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course Dr. Robinson is pointing out that the Kyoto Protocol, if you ever really read it, it didn't apply to some of the biggest polluters in the world, China and India, both of whom are increasingly adding CO2 to the atmosphere. Yeah, CO2 was the real problem why they would be included, but it's almost, it looks many times as I look at this, Dr. Robinson, as if this was really targeted at the United States.
It definitely is. And we're very fortunate because, I mean, what if, I know people have all kinds of opinions about our president for all sorts of reasons, but George Bush stood between the United States and the Kyoto Protocol and said no, and the American people owe him a great debt of thanks for having done so.
Well, I certainly would agree with you totally on that. Of course, I think that at least initially, the Senate wasn't willing to go along with this either, were they?
They weren't initially, and they voted, in fact, I think 95 to nothing, that they would not. But this has been weakening over the years because all kinds of people with money and power and prestige and influence have been working on Congress. I don't know what the vote would be today. When this first came up in the Clinton administration, the Senate voted 95 to nothing that it would never go along with it.
Because if they, of course, understood that this would just simply gut the American industries, we would not be able to be competitive. And I think if people understand that this was really an attack on our industrial base, why, you would understand what was happening. But then we have to wonder why so many people like the Al Gores of the world and the John Kerrys of the world were going along with something that would be so destructive to America.
Well, but they don't care about America. They care about their political careers.
I think that's a very
valid... There are a lot of politicians that don't care about our country. They simply care about personal power.
Well, now, one of the really puzzling things is, why is it that the media almost seems to have a coordinated effort to point out the danger of global warming? We see all these programs on television about, oh, you know, there's all these storms. There was a program recently talking about Category 7, although they were talking about the fact that our cities were heat islands because we had electricity there and it was generating heat. It was creating all these horrible storms. But they kept sort of inferring that somehow global warming had a factor in that. And then, of course, the heat islands, but we see how television is used, we see how articles in the media are used about the retreating glaciers and day after day.
Yeah, of course they lie about it. They tell you the glaciers are retreating, but they don't tell you that it started 300 years ago.
No, they certainly don't. And how about that thing about the Arctic ice cap, you know, and these poor old polar bears, what's going to happen to the polar bears?
Well, there are two reasons I think that the media do this. One is that fear sells. They find that their ratings go up and their careers are enhanced when they have some frightening story to tell. Fear sells. And a headline saying everything is all right today isn't going to sell very many newspapers. That's one reason. The other reason is that our media is very, very left-wing, very, very socialist in bent, and our media generally likes huge government programs, likes the things that cause the government to control the lives of people. So as a result, our media people are politically like the idea of building a bureaucracy and controlling everybody in every way, shape, or form, including their energy use. They tend to be anti-industry, anti-production. That's the political bent of our media, not everyone, but the vast majority of them.
Hold that
thought.
That's one reason. Hold
that thought
right there, please.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Dr. Art Robinson. And certainly we're talking about the media bent and the fact that the media has been telling us about how the glaciers are receding. And the truth is, the glaciers are receding, but they've been receding for 300 years. Oh, the Arctic ice cap is melting, but the Arctic ice cap has been melting for 300 years. And, of course, Dr. Robinson comments that the media seems to have an agenda. It seems to be a left-wing agenda that always wants more government control over our lives.
I'll give you an example of how this is done. There was a headline quite a while ago in USA Today, temperatures warmest in 600 years. That's right. The temperature was much warmer 1,000 years ago. Then the Earth's temperature, the solar activity receded, it dropped, the temperature fell. It fell into Little Ice Age 300 years ago, and it's been coming up since then. So if you go back along that curve, you go down 300 years until you're at the coldest 300 years ago, and then you start up the curve until you're at the warmest about 1,000 years ago. Well, as you go up that curve, you pass the current temperature at about 600 years. So they said temperature is warmest in 600 years. It was true. But it wasn't the warmest in 700 years. 700 years ago, it was warmer. 800 years ago, even warmer. 900 years ago, even warmer. So they simply picked 600 years, which was the farthest they could go back before the temperatures were warmer than they were today, and they give this headline. The headline is a lie, basically. It's a falsehood of omission. It makes it look like these temperatures are really unusual, but it covers up the fact that if you go back over 600 years, the gist of their statement is false.
Well, what about this hockey stick that we see the pictures of? We see this long, flat line, and all of a sudden we see it angle up sharply.
Yeah, well, that bears virtually no relation to the real data. It was just a lie. And there have been a significant number of learned papers written now showing that this is just nonsense. The guy did the calculations wrong, and the temperature curve just absolutely does not look like that.
And what about the United Nations?
It's pure propaganda. It's not true.
Well, we had this United Nations committee that got all the scientists together and came up with a report that said, oh, but there really is global warming. The scientists all agree. Look here, this United Nations report.
Well, this, you see, was false, too. They used to brag about how there were 2,000 scientists at the seminal meeting. They've had some more meetings, but the main meeting was 2,000 scientists. Well, in fact, there were 2,000 people at the meeting. 1,100 were scientists. 385 were American scientists. And a large number of those did not agree with the premise of human-caused global warming. They went to the meeting in order to provide input and to try to convince people to pay attention to the facts. After all these people went home, a very small group wrote the report of the United Nations, and that report was never submitted to the 2,000, including the 1,100 scientists, for their approval. So they have it's a standard game. You get a lot of people in a room for a public meeting. You all mill around and say things and have input and so forth. Then when everybody goes home, you write down what you want the meeting to have said, and you point at all the people that came and claim they're all for you. Those scientists never, ever were allowed to personally comment in a way that the public could see on that report. It was not submitted to the 2,000, or there are actually 1,100 scientists there. Those 1,100 people never voted yes or no their approval on the report. They were just at the meeting. So this idea that there were 2,000 scientists in this IPCC meeting and they put out this report saying humans are warming the planet is just a lie.
But, you know, it doesn't really matter. As long as you can convince the people it's true, and so much of what we see in the media today is a lie. But it's a matter of perception. And a lie told often enough, doesn't matter how ridiculous it is, will be accepted by the great masses of people. And that's why I think your work has been so important, trying to bring the truth out to people across America. Are we making any progress?
Yes, I think the warmers haven't gotten the American people into the Kyoto Treaty yet, and I hope it'll remain that way. We'll see what happens in the political process. And I think people are getting tired of it. And more scientific data is coming out to refute it, like the study I mentioned. Now, there were two reports in Science, at the end of April, the journal Science. One of them, by a government lab that is all 14 warmers, 14 authors, and this big folder, they had discovered that the oceans were warming. And then they said that proved humans were warming them. Well, nonsense. The oceans are warming right along with everything else as we come out of the Little Ice Age. That got front page news all over the country by the press. Simultaneously, one day later, in Science and print edition, came out this nice study by this one scientist showing that 169 world glaciers, they were receding, but they started 300 years ago, 275 years ago. But more and more data like that is coming out, and these people are having a harder and harder time covering up the truth.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Dr. Arif Robinson. We're talking about what I call the global warming scam. But they are certainly doing a good job. I know there are a lot of good people who see, we're told all the scientists agree it must be true. And yet, of course, Dr. Robinson has got petitions from so many of the leading scientists in the world who acknowledge that although the world is warming, it has nothing to do with a human activity because it's warm before. In fact, I think one of the most amazing things is the story of Greenland. Why do they call Greenland, this great mass of ice, why do they call that Greenland? Dr. Robinson, why would they call Greenland Greenland?
Well, Greenland Greenland because it was green 1,000 years ago when they named it. In 1,000 years ago, during what is called, it's interesting, the period 1,000 years ago when it was much warmer than today, is called the medieval climate optimum, because the climate all over the world was much more benign. They say the climate's going to get worse as it warms up, but in fact, it was a lot warmer 1,000 years ago. We had a very benign climate. They were growing grapes in Scotland, and they were growing crops in Greenland. Greenland was green. Then, after that 1,000 year, the period 1,000 years ago when it was warm, the sun diminished in intensity a little bit, and the Earth's temperature fell into the Little Ice Age, and Greenland was covered entirely with ice and snow, and it wasn't green anymore. Now we're coming out of the Little Ice Age, and Greenland's warming up, and if the temperature goes up as high, if the sun continues to increase in its intensity, and the temperature goes as high as it was 1,000 years ago, Greenland will be green again.
And I think what the important thing to understand is that we're not being told the truth. They never tell you that, that the Earth has been much warmer in the past and during those periods of time. Why, of course, it was a much more benign environment. Now, one of the things we're told over and over again is, well, look at all these hurricanes. Look at all these tornadoes. Obviously, global warming. What's your response to that, Dr. Robinson?
Well, it's simple. You have to make a graph of the number of tornadoes per year versus time, or the number of hurricanes per year versus time, and so forth. And if you make that graph, rather than just being alarmed by the hurricane of the moment, you will find that Atlantic hurricanes are not increasing in intensity or in number or severity. There was recently an incident. The IPCC, United Nations thing, had a man, a very prominent hurricane expert, on their staff who was writing the part about hurricanes for their reports. And he was a world-renowned researcher in hurricanes. But they started putting out press releases and having press conferences claiming that the hurricane intensity and number was increasing because of global warming.
Hold that thought right for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was asking Dr. Robinson about the fact that we're told, look, we're having all these terrible hurricanes now, more than we've ever had before, and we're having more tornadoes than we have before, obviously evidence of global warming. And Dr. Robinson, go ahead and tell your
story. Well, the chief scientist working for the UN IPCC group, the principal pushers of global warming, quit. And he says, I'm quitting because you guys are lying to the public. You know, and I know, that the data shows that there has been no increase in number and severity of Atlantic hurricanes during the period that carbon dioxide has been increasing. So you and I both know that CO2 has nothing to do with Atlantic hurricanes, and all the scientific data says this, and yet you're putting out propaganda saying the opposite. So I refuse to participate anymore, and he quit.
Well, that took a lot of courage on his part, because, you hate to give up a good government-paying job.
And if you go to our website at OSM.org and you go to the petition project page, you'll see that 8-page review article. And it right there, you'll see a graph of number and severity of Atlantic hurricanes versus time. And that graph will show you that they're not increasing.
Would you give that...
It's not changed because we have a couple of hurricanes. And, I mean, I was in Houston about 30 years ago when a hurricane went over close to Houston that was just as severe as the hurricane that hit New Orleans. And the water came in, Galveston was inundated, and the water came 30 miles inland toward Houston, and all this stuff happened. These hurricanes like that happen, and they're not new. And just because the press makes a huge deal over the most recent hurricane, and just because they have some weak levees in New Orleans, so it makes it worse for the people of New Orleans, doesn't change the fact that if you make a graph of number and severity of Atlantic hurricanes versus year, and you look at a graph over, say, a 50-year period, they aren't increasing.
All right, fine. And what's that webpage again where people can go and get the information?
Well, if they go to OISM.org.
OISM, that's Oregon Institute of what?
Science Medicine.
Science Medicine, okay.
OISM.org. And then on the left sidebar, if you go down, you'll see Petition Project. If you click Petition Project, it'll take you to a website that shows you the names of all the scientists who signed the petition, and it will also show you an 8-page review article, all reference to the scientific literature, which shows the truth of all the points I'm making and a lot more points that are comparable.
All right, well, if you're out in the listening audience and you'd like to talk to Dr. Robinson, who is certainly one of the most knowledgeable people I know on the subject of global warming, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And the big problem we have is we're not getting the truth from the newspapers. And certainly there are other people out there. Dr. Fred Singer's been writing a lot about this as well, hasn't he?
Yes. There's a lot of good people working on it. The Wall Street Journal editorial page has been excellent. We wrote two feature editorials on that editorial page about this. The Wall Street Journal is not so good on its front page, but its editorial page is excellent on this issue. And there are a lot of people telling the truth, and the biggest force we have going for us is the Internet, because it is now not possible to conceal the truth. You know, when the truth and a lie are both sitting beside each other, the public can usually tell the difference. The reason the media have been able to lie so effectively to the American people has been that they've been able to cover up the truth. The truth is not heard, only the lie. But now the Internet is there, and both can be heard, and it's becoming much more difficult to lie. And that has been a tremendous force for good in this issue and some other important scientific issues where the media has not told the truth.
And I think the point you make about the Wall Street Journal is quite accurate. The editorial page of the Wall Street Journal is quite conservative on most issues. The rest of the newspaper, of course, has a left-wing bent to it. So you've got to be a little schizophrenic to read the Wall Street Journal. You've got to understand that the first part of the newspaper will have nothing to do with what you see on the editorial page. And once you understand that, you won't be so confused by reading it. Somebody had pointed that out before. I think it's such a very valid point.
And also, the word conservative is a little bit loaded. The truth is that the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal generally tells the truth.
All right.
And on this issue, they definitely tell the truth. And if it's conservative to tell the truth, so be it. Liberals can tell the truth, too. And some of them are. Some of the most effective people working against the warmers used to be liberals, and then they discovered they were being lied to. They're still liberals, but they're mad because they were lied to on this issue, and so they're working hard against the people who lied to them.
Well, you know, the one thing about liberals is most of them feel very, very deeply, and most of them are much more willing to get involved and do something than so many of the conservatives I know who seem to want to conserve their own energy by not doing anything. And the liberals, at least they feel strong enough and passionately enough that they're involved, and I credit them for that.
Well, also, I mean, these people are not all the one type, and you get an intelligent liberal and you lie to him, and because a man really only knows about an issue if he studies it carefully. How do you know about the global warming issue? Just because you believe something I said or somebody else said? No. You can only know about it if you study the issue and study the facts carefully. But, so if you take a liberal, and he's an intelligent and honest man, and you lie to him about this, and then he happens to study the facts and discover you've been lying, he gets really angry and becomes your worst enemy.
Well, that's why
we have some very prominent liberals working against the warmers now, because exactly that happened to them.
And, of course, you and I have to be right all the time, you know, because if we say something that isn't right, they'll be there to jump all over us.
Well, we can't be right all the time, but you don't have to believe what I'm saying. Go to that website, take that 8-page article, read it yourself. Well, it's all reference to the scientific literature, and if you don't believe the references, go look them up. It's the truth. That's one of the nice things about science. It's true or false, and the truth can't be hidden if you will look at the primary data.
Well, we have a caller, and he wants to know if there's an 11,500-year cycle of ice ages due to solar fluctuations, and are we on the verge of one of these 11,500-year cycles? Now, have you heard of anything of that sort?
No, I don't know anything about that.
All right.
On this issue, there is superb scientific data going back about 3,000 years on the Earth's temperature, and that proves our point, and I prefer not to discuss longer time periods. The farther back you go, the more tenuous the data is. And I, since we can prove our points about the sun's fluctuation and the Earth's temperature going back 3,000 years, where the data is not only solid, but it can all be checked against the historical record, no error can be made. So I, all the points I'm making and everything we need to know about the global warming thing is concerning sun's fluctuation and temperature fluctuation. It's all contained in the 3,000-year record. I don't go back any further to where I'm having to rely on data, which is, I'm not saying it's bad, it's just more tenuous because we don't have a historical record to corroborate it, and we don't have as good a angle on exactly what the temperatures were. So I don't usually discuss that, and I don't know much about it.
Well, I think it's better to stay with the things we're absolutely certain of. One of these people keep talking about this happened so many billion years ago or 100 million years ago, and I just keep wondering, how do they know? Well, they don't know, but somebody said
know.
It. And
the truth is they don't know.
They don't.
And it's we have a tendency to get a little too proud of the things that we think we know. And scientists do that too, and they people go off, and you're entitled to think about and speculate on anything you want. But when you get that far back, it's part data and part imagination.
A lot of imagination, I suspect. But right now, we've got Roger calling from Allentown, Pennsylvania. And, of course, if you're listening to this program, a free broadcast in the afternoon on the Here's Help Radio Network, you can't call in because this is being, of course, recorded live in the evening. Roger, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, if you please. Well, you know that liberal is really an acronym for lacking in basic education, research, and logic.
Well, do you have a question, Roger?
Yeah. Now, is there anything to that? There was near-record surface water temperatures contributed to Katrina, maybe near-record setting, the magnitude of it, and...
Let's get the response.
As I said, there was a hurricane just as bad as that went past Houston 3 decades ago.
Okay, that's...
We don't know everything there is to know about these things, but we do know that the medieval climate optimum was named that way because the whole the climate of the Earth was much milder, and it was a lot warmer then. So I don't think we need to worry too much about the climate getting warmer. You know, the people did just fine when it was warmer 1,000 years ago, and we have a rich historical record of that time. We know how things were. Now, that isn't to say that there's not some... I mean, you could study surface temperatures of the ocean as a function of hurricane intensities and so forth. So you're going to study this, you better do some good work, like statistical work, where you consider dozens of hurricanes and you take data. You don't just point at hurricanes as, oh, I got a hypothesis, that one was made worse because of global warming. This is nonsense. This isn't science. This is just talk.
Was there any confluence of El Nino peaks or anything could be pointed to that would... Well, that could be expected at this time in particular. And God bless.
All right, thanks. All right, let's go to Keith, who's calling from Capitola. Keith, did you have a question for Dr. Robinson?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you remember the last ice age back in 1968?
You mean that they were talking about a little ice age? They were writing about global cooling. We're all going to freeze to death, right?
Yeah, I remember
they were talking in 68. They were talking about global cooling.
Right.
Yeah, well, they...
As the temperature has warmed over the last 300 years, it hasn't gone straight up. It goes up in cycles. Sometimes it's actually a cooling cycle, and they started talking about global cooling and the cooling cycle 30 years ago.
But, I mean, when I was in high school, it was on the evening news. It was they're teaching it in science class. We're going into the next ice age.
Yep.
The winters they have up in Canada, we're going to have in the middle of the country, is going to, you know, everything's going to freeze, everybody's going to starve to death. And I try to remind people of that. Everybody when we talk about global warming, and nobody remembers.
And you remember the culprit?
No, I was going to ask you. Remember who put that out?
Coal, oil, and natural gas.
Pardon?
Well, at the time when they were saying this, they said that the cooling was being caused by human use of coal, oil, and natural gas. The same thing they say is causing warming now. Yeah. If you look at the political activities of the time, you'll find out that the same people who were screaming about the little ice, the next ice age, and claiming that we were pushing ourselves into an ice age by using coal, oil, and natural gas, are the same people that today are saying global warming is a problem because we're using coal, oil, and natural gas.
Yeah,
these people are, to a large extent, the same people.
It was the same
number.
They did cool off
onto whatever temperature curve there is. It was cooling then, so they said, it's being caused by the technology we want to stop.
It was cooled
warming,
off
so they
degrees.
Say, that's being caused by the technology we want to stop.
And it cooled off like one and a half to 2 degrees. And it go, you know, big, everybody's freaking out. And like now it's warmed up 1.5, 2 degrees, which means it basically evened out.
Yeah, well, it's also warmed up as the sun warms up, so it's not really a lot we can do about it.
Well, I mean, the thing too is like they're taking the temperatures from all the same places, right? I mean, it's like, and as the cities grow, and there's more asphalt and concrete putting put in, the places where they're taking the temperature is going up that little bit.
This was a problem. The temperature curves that the UN used were largely, were heavily biased toward temperatures taken in urban areas where heat island effects made it worse. If you went to the rural areas, there was much less warming. But even if you take the temperature right, Earth has been warming for 300 years. It happens that in the last couple of decades, it hasn't been warming, and this has been a big problem for them, and you could make it look like it's warming if you took the temperature in the middle of Los Angeles.
Yeah. What was that website again? You have the reports on?
OISM.org.
Oregon Institute of Scientific Medicine.
Science and Medicine.
OISM.org.
And then if you look on the sidebar and look at petition project, it'll take you to the global warming information.
Okay, great.
Because what I do, Keith, is I go up in Google and I type in Dr. Art Robinson, and then they give me his website.
Well, if you want to, you can go to Google and type in carbon dioxide atmospheric, carbon dioxide global warming, and the first thing that come up will be the website I just described.
And let me tell you, Keith, you can depend upon Dr. Robinson's work. I've known him for many years, and he's one of the real leaders in this. And he really had to be to get all the scientists to be willing to, answer his petition and put their reputations on the line. And let me tell you that when you were a scientist depending upon grants from industry and other places, it takes a lot of courage to sign a petition. Some of the scientists a little reluctant to sign petitions?
Well, this is a problem, and although many of the scientists who signed the petition are in jobs and so forth where they could be harmed, there was a bias among the signers in that especially some of the most famous ones tended to be older scientists whose careers couldn't be ruined.
And I think
it is hard for a university scientist who's in the prime of his career or an industrial scientist to get involved in an issue like this because it can hurt his career, and they are reluctant. And this is reflected in the petition. We have thousands of physicists who signed the petition, but fewer of them than would be statistically expected are younger men in the prime of their careers living on government grants and so forth. They just don't want to get involved in a fight like this because it can only hurt them.
What a tragic commentary that is on science when people can't necessarily say what they know to be true because of the possible financial career implications.
Well, it's a problem. You're not studying this subject. You're studying some important areas of physical science. You got about 10 people working for you in your lab. You depend upon a government grant, and you're afraid that if you put your name on something like this, it might cost you your grant, and those 10 people will lose their jobs, and your research would stop. It's a big problem. And just saying I was a hero and I signed it, it doesn't help. You say to yourself, well, I'll let somebody else fight that.
Right. Okay, anything else, Keith?
No, that'd be great. I really appreciate it.
And thanks very much, and keep telling those people that you meet about the global cooling that they were telling us about 30 years ago.
Yeah, we'll do.
God bless.
Yeah, Lord bless you, too. Thank you.
Okay, fine. Well, certainly I think that really one of the terrible things that's happening is where pressure can be put on scientists to prostitute their profession. But isn't that sort of one of the reasons why you picked up and left USC to go off on your own?
It was actually UC San Diego.
Okay.
And I left there to build a research institute in Menlo Park, California, And we wanted to, we were working on nutrition and preventive medicine and some other subjects which were not as easily worked on in an academic atmosphere, partly because they weren't very popular with the government bureaucrats who were funding the academic atmosphere. After that, my wife and I wanted to raise our children on a farm in the country, and we were both scientists, so we decided we'd just start our own little laboratory and have fun, rather than trying to be in a big-time laboratory where we had to raise them in the city. So we moved here for personal reasons.
Well, anyway, it's a beautiful...
It happens that the reason I got into this was because my friend Peter Beckman, who started the newsletter Access to Energy, asked me to take the newsletter over after he died of cancer. I've been writing it for 12 years, and this caused me to write about these issues, and I was free to write about them because I was not under the thumb of these institutions. Had I been in a sensitive job in the university, I would not have been free to write about these things.
Hold on that thought. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest has been Dr. Art Robinson. We've got 3 minutes before we can have to let him go. But it's been a fascinating, fascinating time, and I think we've covered so many subjects, and one of them, of course, is the fact that scientists are in search of truth. That's what science is all about. But unfortunately, there's an economic aspect to this, and Dr. Robinson has simply commented that many scientists who are in search of truth are also dependent upon government grants and university grants and this sort of thing, and sometimes their search of truth has to be influenced by what's expedient rather than what's right. And of course, Dr. Robinson, because he was independent and writing a newsletter, certainly funded by his by the people who were subscribing to the newsletter and using independent sources of income for his research, was able to actually bring out the truth about the global warming fraud, whereas many scientists really would have been very reluctant to do that. Would that be a fair statement?
That's fair. Not all, because there are many principled people who are basically carrying the anti-global warming cause and doing so at the risk of their careers. So this is not true of everyone, but it is so true that a great many scientists don't speak out on these issues for this reason.
And, of course, this then begins to undermine the fabric of science, and really, so this is sort of what happened to the Soviet Union, isn't it? When, if you didn't speak out against the government, and so many scientists simply went along
Under Stalin, if you said the wrong thing, it was worse. You didn't lose your research grant, you lost your life. So they were a little tougher, but it's the same thing, only they did it they were a lot tougher than our situation.
And, of course, the tragedy that Russian scientists suffered because the scientists were not free to do what was right. And, of course, increasingly here in the United States, although you won't lose your life, you'll lose your grant.
Grant, you won't be able to publish your work, you lose your position. You can be forced out of science for taking unpopular positions.
Well, I'm glad that you've been in a position where you could get the truth out, and I really appreciate the information. Once again, that website is IOSM.
OISM, OISM.org.
Right. Okay, fine. Well, God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us, and
thank you, appreciate you
spending the time with us.
Great, thank you.
Good night. God bless. All right, fine. Well, I guess it's been Dr. Arthur Robinson of the Oregon Institute of Science and Medicine, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes to wrap up the program here at Radio Liberty. But it's important you understand that this is a scam and has been put over in the American people because the people who control the mass media, those five great corporations, Fox, Bertelsmann, Disney, Viacom, and AOL, Time Warner, are in on it. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're dependent on those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out across America on 60 stations every week, and what a privilege it is to get the truth out, the truth that you're not going to get through so many of the newspapers and magazines and television and radio across America. And this global warming scam is simply one of the many issues that is being utilized today. I believe that the fear of the bird flu influenza. Now, I'm not saying there's not going to be an epidemic, but I will tell you that our government is working on a creation of new diseases for mass murder. How can I possibly say something like that? Well, I'll be glad to send you the pages out of the government testimony that were given back in 1969, July of 1969, by Dr. McDonald, as I think was his name, Dr. MacArthur was his name, who testifying before the House Appropriations Committee about wanting $10 million to create a new disease, for there would be no immune response, and that some people thought they shouldn't be doing that because it was another method of mass murder, but they wanted the money, and I guess they got the money because 10 years later we had the AIDS epidemic, but the American people aren't supposed to know that that sort of thing really goes along. But if you'd like to see the pages out of that testimony, we'd be glad to send it to you free of charge. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Now, we have the complete testimony, but we just simply send you a couple of pages out of that testimony for you to read what Dr. MacArthur actually said. We think it's vitally important that you understand that there really are people who have a different worldview. There really are people who have no human compassion, who believe there are too many people in the world, who will create new diseases like AIDS and chronic fatigue syndrome and like Lyme disease and certainly like SARS and like NIFA disease and all sorts of new diseases. They know how to produce them, and they're in the process of producing them today. And, of course, we brought West Nile disease to the United States. It existed over in Europe. We actually brought it here to develop it for biological warfare. And do you know something? Why, we've got West Nile all across America today. Shucks, do you think maybe it just got out of the lab by mistake? And maybe not only that, we reconstituted terrible influenza of 1918 and the Spanish flu, and actually they're shipping it through the mails today. And, of course, if it gets out, they'll just say it was a mistake. Why, we don't know how that happened. Ladies and gentlemen, we're dealing with organized evil on a level that is unprecedented. If you go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, RadioLiberty.com, read about the Georgia Guidestones, the plan to eliminate over 90% of the population of the world. Point one of the Ten Commandments on the Georgia Guidestones that come from the pit of hell is maintain the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature. They're talking about eliminating over 90% of the world's population. So please, of course, seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And then go to our website, pull down our newsletters, listen to our programs on the internet at RadioLiberty.com. 5 hours a day, listen to our archive programs. Use this as a source of reference. And then, of course, pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty. We're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. So until we're together again, may the Lord be with you.